You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
Welcome to Managing Technology the Right Way with your host, Sun Jogal, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. If you don't have time for college, let the college come to you via the Internet. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Now showing you how to manage technology the right way, here's Sun Jogal.
Morning, folks, and welcome to the show. It needs careful planning and flawless execution to make technology work for us. But how many times do we succeed? On this show, we invite business leaders and subject matter experts with extensive experience in technology management. The intent here is to learn from their experience and discuss better ways to manage technology. To learn more about the show, please visit talkshow.avval.com. That is talkshow.avval.com. Today's topic is First IM and Now Blogging, the Enterprise Adoption Challenge. Our guests for today's show are John Patrick and Mena Trott. John is the president of Attitude LLC and former vice president of internet technology at IBM, where he worked for 35 years. During his IBM career, John helped start IBM's leasing business at IBM Credit Corporation and was senior marketing executive for the launch of the IBM ThinkPad brand. Business 2.0 named him as one of the industry's most intriguing minds. Industry Week named him one of the top 30 people who drive innovation and provide the initial spark to economic growth. And Network World called him one of the 25 most powerful people in networking. John was a founding member of the World Wide Web Consortium at MIT in 1994, a founding member and now the chairman of the Global Internet Project. He's a member of the board of directors of Jupiter Media and Novel Corporation and has been an advisor to Intralinx, Neoteny, Space.com, and Third Age Media. Mena Trott is the co-founder and president of Six Apart, the creators of the TypePad service and movable type software, two of the leading tools for publishing weblogs. In addition to her role leading the management and business efforts of Six Apart, Mena enjoys working on making the products aesthetically pleasing as well as functionally intuitive. When she's not developing movable type, she writes for her own weblog, dollarshort.org, contributed to Essential Blogging, and publishes posts regularly on the Six Apart Company weblog at sixapart.com. Good morning, panel. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good morning.
How are you guys keeping busy? Busy enough?
We're certainly keeping busy. Lots been happening since Ben and I, which is my husband who formed the company with me, in the past year, we've grown from about 2 to almost 40 employees. So it's been a busy year.
That's wonderful. How about you, John?
Yeah, I've been quite busy also. I run into Ben and Mena from time to time at conferences, so I can certainly attest to what she was just speaking of with regard to their company. We served on a panel together out at Demo in February, and I generally have been doing a lot of blogging about blogging and also traveling around the world talking about it and among other topics. So yeah, we're busy people.
Oh, that's great. It's a good problem to have. Now, while the concept of blogging is mainly understood as a way of self-publishing, or you can say, you know, when you want to vent out your creativity, but how can we possibly use it for organizations while people there also will blog, but how can we convert this, you know, venting of the employees versus venting of individuals and make use of it?
Well, I think that one of the reasons why weblogging has taken off and has succeeded where static web pages haven't is that the organization and the structure of weblogs is pretty firm or fixed. And so the fact that posts that are recently posted appear up on the top help people understand how a weblog functions. So it's the fact that a weblog is clear to understand that the categories, the archives, help organize content is one of the reasons why it's easy to find a weblog and pick up what sections apply to which. So that's, I think, one of the reasons why they have taken off and why it can help organizations.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. I think even thinking at a higher level business-wise, successful businesses are ones who communicate well. And blogging is a new way to communicate. And it doesn't replace all of the other ways. To some degree it does, but it really creates a new way that is very simple. And as Mina says, it's very easy to adapt it, adopt to it. It's not confusing. In a way, it's like the web was in the very beginning. You didn't have to go to a class to learn how to surf the web. You just sort of automatically, oh, I click here and something happens. And likewise, blogging is very intuitive. The simplicity of subject, date, author, category, content really strikes people as a very simplistic way to find what they're looking for and get the opinion of the many millions of people in the world who have a point of view about things.
So if I were to say that, if I were to go and compare a blog with, or maybe you can say blogging, or say a complete blog to be a discussion board, how would we differentiate between the two?
I think that the biggest difference is that there's one strong voice of a web blog usually, that someone owns it, or a small group owns it. A bulletin board is usually this effort where many people contribute. No one really is the main person in charge, or at least it isn't perceived that way. And the conversations do flourish, but there isn't that idea that you're at someone's home. And I think that can still be applied with businesses, is that there still is going to be ultimately a group in control or individual in control of the weblog that is kind of facilitating conversation. But bulletin boards are more, they're not as directed, which is a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, bulletin boards serve a purpose for when there should be a lot of discussion about various topics and there doesn't need to be prompting. But I think weblogs are great because they allow one person to kind of steer a direction of the conversation as well as put out their own opinions.
Now, would you... Go ahead, John.
Well, I can't add a lot to that. I think it's simplistically, it's a more organized, more owner-centric. In other words, there's as Mina said, if somebody is in charge of it, they're expressing their point of view. They do, or they may allow conversation around it, or they may not. I would say most blogs, maybe Mina has some statistics on this, but I think more so than bulletin boards and forums, the blog is where a particular person expresses their point of view, you know, their opinion about things. And if they're credible, and of course the readers will sort that out very quickly, then they'll have a lot of attention and become a source of information. Whereas the forums and the threaded discussion groups, I would say, are a bit more chaotic. You're not really sure who's in charge, and they're a bit more random.
So you would say we are one step ahead of a discussion board, where we are saying, okay, give it some structure, make somebody a leader, and make a theme out of it, and then whosoever contributes has to kind of adhere to that theme.
Yeah, but it's also more, it's closer to publishing, and it's archived. And I know in my own case, at patrickwebb.com, I find that blogging is not only a way to express my point of view, but it's also a way to archive it and to create, in a sense, like a diary. And, you know, I can go back I've been doing this for 5 or 6 years. I can go back a very long way and, you know, find prior content, as can others.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, let me ask you this, though. When we talk about, you know, blogging, can the very, very fact of blogging is that it should be for the whole world to see. But should we or can we make it private?
Oh.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the fact that it's for the whole world to see is something that it's a misconception that many new bloggers have been forced to kind of feel because of the way that blogging has been portrayed. A lot of people feel that web blogging is really for, you know, pundits or people who want to share every single detail with their life with the entire world. You've seen a lot of people become very popular because they're web blogs, and these are the kind of web blogs that you're first exposed to. So then, of course, you link a web blog equals having many people read. So if you've come in contact with Instant Pundit, which is Glenn Reynolds' web blog, who has hundreds of thousands of visitors every day, then that's something that you think that you're supposed to aspire to. But we're seeing that most people not only do not really need to have tens and thousands of readers for their web blog, but they don't necessarily want it. I know that I reached a point where I had tens of thousands of readers, and I kind of didn't like it because I felt like I was forced to either perform and to create content for people other than myself and for the people who I knew that I wanted to read my blog. So I've reached a point where I'm more comfortable with the idea that 10 people read my weblog, and these 10 people are people I really care about, and they could be online and they can be off people from my life offline. But we're going to work to make it easier for people to have blogs that are password protected or access controlled. So that's a really big component. I think that's the way that blogs are really going to hit the mainstream.
Yeah, I agree. There are many family blogging opportunities, and I'm sure there are large numbers of them where somebody goes on a trip and they want to be able to share their experience with their family. It's not something they necessarily want to share with the whole world. Some people do, but I think there are larger numbers of people who would rather keep it private. A friend of mine at IBM created a blog for a high school band trip, you know, a bus trip. They went to Ohio to play a concert and so on, and one of the parents went along in the bus with, you know, as a chaperone, and blogged about the trip so that the parents back at home could read it. So that's not trying to compete with the New York Times, right? It may or may not have been password protected, but clearly the intent of that was a very small number of readers. And they don't really care how many either. They're not trying to become famous. They're just trying to share a fairly private set of activities.
So one statistic on our end, for our TypePad service, which is a hosted web blogging service, about 33% of our users decide that they want to make their web blogs private. That means that their web blogs don't appear in our recently updated list, that they aren't spidered by search engines like Google, and that they don't ping outside sites that let people know that their content has been updated. So that's 33%, and 10% of all of our sites overall password protect. While you can still discover the 33% that are private, it's really not their goal to be discovered. And for the 10%, they certainly don't want to be discovered.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages. And let's talk about, you know, like with every public posting mechanism, once you have entered an entry, then it should not be revoked. And there's a good or bad side to it. But let's take that topic when we come back from the break. So please stay tuned.
Today, college graduates average 75 to 110% more income than non-graduates. But if you don't have time to go to college, let the college come to you via the Internet. At University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree when and wherever you want in just 2 to 3 years. University of Phoenix, the largest private accredited university in the U.S. We offer degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix Online at 1-800-797-3011.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Informative, entertaining, and educational talk. www.voiceamerica.com. Come find out what you've been missing.
Does your 9-to-5 make you feel 6 feet under? Tune in to One-on-One with nationally known columnist Jay Whitehead to learn ways to turn your career around. Heard every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, Jay will give you tips on promotions, salary negotiations, relocation, and the real skinny on bonus money. So tune in and get out of the 9-to-5 rut with One-on-One with Whitehead every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com on the SurfNet Radio Network. Brought to you by SurfNet Media Group, publicly traded under the symbol SFNM. BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
What stock should I buy?
When is it time to sell?
Where do I turn for honest advice on my portfolio?
For the answers to these questions, tune in to Trading in Today's Market with Oliver Alvarez and Greg Capra every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Oliver, Greg, and their guests will discuss the daily going-ons of Wall Street, as well as give you tips on how to identify the hottest sectors and trends in the market. So improve your portfolio. Listen to Trading in Today's Markets with Oliver Alvarez and Greg Capra. Broadcast live on Business America Radio every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
You are listening to Managing Technology the Right Way, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is First IM and Now Blogging, the Enterprise Adoption Challenge. Our guests for today's show are John Patrick and Mina Trott. John is the president of Attitude LLC and former vice president of internet technology at IBM. And Mina is a co-founder and president of Six Apart, the creators of the TypePad service and Movable Type software, two of the leading tools for publishing weblogs. Before the break, we quickly touched the topic about the public posting. Like any other public posting, we know blogging is also a type of public posting. So should we allow, revocation of any of the entries made? Because if you suppose, I'm simply going back to the discussion board concept where we say, okay, while it does not come up to the level of sophistication that blogging allows, but still it has, you can say, restriction that once you have posted, you cannot just go and kill that posting and, you know, try to edit it. So what's there with blogging? What are the protocols that are followed with that?
Well, it's really up to the publisher of the blog. In my own case, at patrickwood.com, I think of it more like a column. So I write a point of view, I publish it, and I tell people if they want to comment, click here to comment, and people will send me an email. And if it's a nice, if it's a good comment, then I will acknowledge it in some way, or maybe I won't. So it's more of a one-way publishing. Other blogs are closer to the bulletin board format, where it's, a bit more free-for-all, and you get lots of people posting lots of things. It's really up to the owner of the individual blog to decide what their policy is.
So you're saying we can actually go and edit an entry that you've made?
No. No, so it's not like a wiki. It's not like a wiki where you can go in and actually edit another person's content.
Oh, no, not other persons. I'm saying, like, if suppose you made a blog this morning and suddenly you feel that maybe there was a typo or something like that which you want to correct.
Yeah, you certainly can edit. You can delete it. You can edit it. You can pull something.
Do anything.
It's discouraged upon because, in certain cases, it's discouraged on. If someone just writes something that perhaps they accidentally published and they're going to publish later in the day and they pull it for that, that's usually fine. But if you say something that's inflammatory or that is, something that you shouldn't be revealing and then you pull it, then that's kind of frowned upon. And I think one of the things that I've always done when I've written something is to kind of think, okay, the minute that I publish this, not only will people who read my weblog read it instantaneously, but it'll already be captured by Google. It'll be captured by the Wayback Machine, so I can't get rid of it. And that's a kind of a good thing. If you don't want to, if you're afraid of what you're going to say, you should usually, think it out before you post. And there's some people who do write things and then remove them, and they certainly receive a lot of flack about it.
Okay. Yeah, you have to think of blogging in a very broad sense. It's like asking, how do people write? Well, some people write a postcard and stick it in the mailbox, and some people write a 50-page letter. Some people send an email. Some people use BCCs. Some people use, you know, they copy half the world on things they write. I mean, there are a lot of different approaches. In a corporate world, it tends to be a bit more structured, and it tends to be a bit more of an acceptable use policy that companies have, certainly with regard to the appropriateness of content. And companies would certainly not want to have employees using the blog to express their political views or their sexual views or religious views or things of that nature.
And that was why, I mean, in a way, my next question is, while we know about the categories that you mentioned, which are like, you know, people should refrain from them, there's also a possibility, and there's almost like a paranoia from a company standpoint, that an employee who goes and blogs in the open world and might go and say something inappropriate in there, and which might also maybe inappropriate or might even divulge indirectly, you know, so people are always trying to rip apart what a company's spokesperson, maybe not official spokesperson, but any employee coming from there might write something, and they would try to read between the lines and maybe interpret it in a way which would eventually jeopardize or maybe harm the PR of a company. So are there ways by which, you know, this is an actual subjective situation which needs to be dealt with. So how can we reduce the level of fear or paranoia in the company's organization standpoint, or the people who are the management people, so that they allow their employees to blog 1 month, like blog more, basically?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I think that basically employers need to just, you know, remind that, you know, or encourage people to blog, but remind them that, you know, there's certain guidelines that are associated with your job. When we all sign up for jobs, there's things that we're not supposed to do. We're not supposed to disclose proprietary information. And so I think blogging isn't anything new. It's just a different platform to express this stuff. So this, you could lose your job possibly for disclosing something on another form or another way. I mean, I personally know, you know, three or four people who have lost their jobs because of their blogs, because they haven't taken the time to kind of realize you're not supposed to do this sort of thing, taking pictures internally of the company. I mean, these things are not necessarily things that you do if you really are aware of what you should be doing as an employee. So I think education through a company, it would be the first thing. You know, encourage your company to keep a blog, because it'll keep people interested in the corporate culture around the company. But not only do that, but just say, these are, you know, the guidelines. You know, you don't have to say exactly what they have to write, but I think it's important that you kind of express, you know, where the limits are. And I don't think that, you know, not necessarily saying only positive things about a company has to be the only way. I know that there are companies where their web bloggers say things, not critical, but at least they say things that they're working on, or they say things that they know that needs fixed. And the general public likes to see these things, because then they show that it humanizes the company as well as shows that people are working on things.
So have go ahead, John. Turn.
Well, I think most of it is common sense. You know, some people can follow common sense better than other people. Generally speaking, companies will find blogging to be an extremely powerful tool to allow employees to have discussions inside the firewall and also outside the firewall. But there do need to be some guidelines. And that doesn't mean editing. It doesn't mean censorship. It means common sense guidelines. And I know at IBM, for example, when the intranets first started to bloom, and for that matter the extranets as well, back, you know, 10, 12 years ago, we put together an acceptable use policy that was kind of basic stuff like, you know, don't spam people, don't send pornographic material to other employees or to anybody. You know, that kind of, you know, common sense, but don't divulge confidential information about the company. Don't announce products that are not officially announced. You know, don't try to project what the price of something is going to be. It's common sense. And I think it's working really well. You know, like all things, there will be some companies that are very early adopters of blogging, and there will be others who are going to wait too long. You know, they're going to wait a very long time, just like we saw with the web. There's been a lot of press coverage recently about companies using blogging as a new tool. And I know at IBM, where although I retired, I see a lot of what's going on there. They have thousands of bloggers inside the company, and they've more recently set up the DeveloperWorks site, which is actively visited by, of course, developers, and they use blogs now as a way to provide updating of what's going on in the way of developer support. A very powerful tool.
So now while those policies are put in place from the technology standpoint, is there a demand out there? Or, like, for example, Meena, while you're developing the software, has any enterprise come back to you and say, hey, can you put a workflow or something which is technology-dependent workflow which would prevent an employee to go ahead and, post a blog just like that? It has to go through, an authority in the PR department or something like that. Have they come back with this kind of suggestion?
I think that, they have come back, and it isn't necessarily because they're worried about the content so much as it's just a process that they've been used to that would help them. We are incorporating better workflow features into Movable Type. TypePad, which is our consumer service, actually has the ability that you can only give people, guest authors, the ability to post as junior authors, and you have to approve them. But I think that in terms of workflow, one of the reasons why weblogs have gained an adoption within the enterprise is that the workflow, the aspect that's been taken out, helps a lot of people. So you have instances of people who had to go through IT and not only get their posts or their documents converted to HTML, but then the IT department had to put it up, and then someone had to sign off on it, and then it was a week, 2 week, 3 week long process just to get one document up that was an official document. So you see people, especially in the public relations department, being able to take a document that's already been approved and post it within minutes. So on one side of the coin, you have people who might be freely expressing things, but then you have weblogs being used as really lightweight content management systems that really help companies take less time in doing the things that they've always been doing and actually do it more.
So another question I had is, like, while you talk about this particular feature that you're incorporating and people are asking about more and more syndication features and collaboration feature, now this evolution that we are looking towards, the technological enhancement of blogging, while the concept remains that really simple approach of self-publishing, now is this basically done by companies like yours as a way to gain the market share, or is it more because the user community is actually coming back and saying, hey, give me this feature and that feature?
Well, I think we definitely pay attention to what our community wants in our tools. In terms of syndication and the features of communication, our tool reflects what people need, and I think that it's really key that syndication, either in the form of RSS and Atom, is that component that is part of weblogging, because not only do you publish and post or communicate, but you need to be able to have a way for people to easily read your content, and there needs to be that sort of like cycle, this loop, because without one or the other, the communication often shuts down. And so, of course, we incorporate things that people want, and it's been obvious that syndication and ways to syndicate is one of those things.
John, what do you think world is doing? Like, it's a pull effect or is it a push effect?
Well, I think it's both. I believe that over time, when people look for something on the web, they increasingly are going to be more interested in matching their interest against blogs than against general web content. So today you go to Google and you do a search on something and you get 39,485,000 matches. What you really want to know is, what are the people in the know, what do they think about this topic? In other words, it's the element of currency. I don't care about some document that may be in Microsoft or IBM or Sun's archives from 5 years ago. I want to know, what are the people that are thinking about the future of whatever, what are they thinking now? What have they been writing this week on that particular topic? So I envision search engines, having a little checkbox that says, search blogs only.
Let's take a quick break. Do you have more thoughts to add, or we can go for the break?
No, that's fine.
All right, yeah, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and then let's either we can discuss this topic more, or we can actually go ahead and talk about another important thing that's going on, is the reluctance of executives to blog, the senior executives. They would spend all the time in different activities, which might be more time-consuming, but when it comes down to blogging, they somehow don't feel comfortable, or it's not caught on as yet. So why is that, and what can be done to give them the incentive to be able to go and blog? So let's talk about this when we come back from the break. So please stay tuned, listeners. We'll be right back.
Today, college graduates average 75 to 110% more income than non-graduates. But if you don't have time to go to college, let the college come to you via the internet. At University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree when and wherever you want in just 2 to 3 years. University of Phoenix is the largest private accredited university in the U.S. We offer degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix Online at 1-800-797-3011.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist? Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace, as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Rule number one when investing, always have a strategy. Rule number two, listen to Strategies for Enlightened Investors with Jim Whitten and Lance Alston. Heard every Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, Strategies for Enlightened Investors will expose investment myths that just aren't true and let you know about financial planning strategies for your future. Become an enlightened investor every Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome back to Managing Technology the Right Way with Sun Jogal, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. Call in with your questions at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who just tuned in, today's topic is First IM and Now Blogging, the Enterprise Adoption Challenge. Our guests are John Patrick and Mina Trott. John is the president of Attitude LLC and former vice president of Internet Technology at IBM. Mina is the co-founder and president of Six Apart, the creators of TypePad Service and Movable Type Software, two of the leading tools for publishing weblogs. Before the break, we picked up a point about the reluctance of these senior executives. They would go golfing, they would go to happy hours and parties, and, you know, of course, all those things are equally necessary. And they would also go to these technological seminars, and they would give speeches, and they would write long articles. But they would not take 2 minutes to write blogs, and, you know, between the breaks, I was talking to Mina and John. They do see that people have started doing it, but still that's not enough. Like the way we would expect people who are actually going out to these public forums, they do much more of this public forum activity versus spending 2 minutes on a blog, which could be equally powerful. So why is that, and what kind of incentive can be given to them? Is the technology a roadblock, or are the other incentives missing because of which they do not blog as much?
Let me take a crack at that one. I don't think we necessarily want all the senior executives of the world to be blogging. the blogger is a person who is a good communicator and who personally enjoys doing it. And that's really important to the process. It's not an organizational thing. The best blogger in a department, in a company, isn't necessarily the manager of that department or isn't necessarily the most knowledgeable person in the department, but is a person who is a really good communicator, who likes to take the time to add extra links to what they write to make it more useful to other people. That's what a good blogger is. Now, there are senior executives who blog. Alan Meckler, for example, the chairman of the board and CEO of Jupiter Media, has a personal blog, and he writes about the business of Jupiter Media, about conferences and consulting and things that, you know, media business, things that they do. That's, you know, I would say that's fairly unusual. In small companies, it's very typical to have, Mina was describing her. She's the co-founder and president of the company, and she's blogging just like other people do. So you find a mix based on the nature and size of companies and the way they're organized and so on. I think it would be a mistake to think that we really need to have the senior executives all blogging, because what that could lead to is artificial blogs, you know, written by the PR department. They're not really coming from the CEO or the senior executive. They're being written for that person and posted, and I don't think we need that.
So you're taking it that while the enterprise has a need for more people to be blogging, for them to be able to communicate better, but like, for example, a low-level employee who's a great communicator would like to blog, and that's why he communicates well, and, you know, everything goes great. On the other hand, many times there is a, in fact, this is always a chronic issue about the senior executives not expressing themselves enough unless otherwise they meet for a big meeting where everybody huddles around and they would say a few sentences. And everybody at the lower level normally is thinking that, okay, why are we not hearing enough from this person? How, we don't even know how this person thinks. So, I mean, I'm just looking at the other side of it where,
yeah,
his blog would be looked up to, you know, we would look up to such a blog from a senior executive, and he's not forced to it. Yeah, of course, it's a voluntary effort. But the fact is, there is something there that even people who say, I've spoken to a few people, say, I just simply don't have the time, and I don't buy it.
No. Yeah, well, that will be true in some cases, and then there will be others that do it quite actively. It's really a management style issue. Some managers are good communicators and some aren't. The ones who are good communicators and want to communicate regularly and openly will use blogging. In some organizations, there will be cases where they will not do that because they're afraid that they will be misinterpreted, or that they will suppress innovation and communication at the lower levels if they come out and say, you know, I think we should be doing this or that, or my opinion is this. Some people may say, oh, well, we can't innovate in this particular area because the boss said, you know, just read his blog. He said this other direction. So I think it's really a matter of management style, and it's going to be different in all organizations.
And I think one of the, I mean, John alluded to this, is it's a difference between, you know, inside or outside the firewall. You know, sometimes they'll feel more comfortable blogging within a company because they know that the things that they say, you know, then it's not going to be torn apart or at least looked upon as pulled apart. So, I mean, I have my own web blog at Mina, or at sixapart.com/corner, which is called Mina's Corner, which isn't the best name, but we've just fixed it quickly. And it's basically me trying to write about what's happening within the company within reason. I know I'm very paranoid about disclosing confidential information, not because I'm worried I'm going to say the wrong thing, but just because I like things to happen that are, you know, behind the scenes, that are actually things that are still being negotiated on, and I'd rather not ruin a deal because of that. But there's a lot of things that we're doing right now that are confidential. So I try to find the aspects of the company that we can talk about. So we talk about that there's other people at this company. We talk about, you know, what we're doing after we can actually talk about it. And people really like it. But the problem that I've faced is that, and it's not necessarily a problem, but it's just something that I have to address, is that the more information you reveal, the more that they hunger for. And you see that with, you know, like the British tabloids, that when the royal family, like in the 60s, had a video camera or a video team show a day in their lives, that kind of started the need to see them all the time, and you know that led to really the tabloids and paparazzi really stalking them. So I mean, I'm not going to compare a blog to that, but it's just the more you write, the more they want, and you have to have a balance.
So from the standpoint of this paranoia, and to quite an extent, we are in a way saying that anything written or anything spoken by a company individual is not taken as an individual writing. It's written that this guy belongs to this company, and that's why he's writing it. So is there some effort being done from the regulatory standpoint that, you know, literally a person is provided immunity from the standpoint that if he writes a blog, specifically if he writes a memo or something like that, yes, it's considered as official, but if this person is writing a blog, it is not considered as an official statement coming from this person. You're always welcome to interpret it any way you want, but nobody should be held responsible because you wrote it a certain way.
I hope nobody's working on regulations. The last thing in the world we need is regulation of the Internet.
Not regulating it. Like, you know, in fact, we are not saying that you stop people from blogging. I'm saying create a regulation which says, you know, if somebody is writing a blog, don't hold them responsible and don't make them pay for it because they wrote certain things and they take it as an official statement and they lose their job because of it.
You can't have regulations like that. That would be a horrible mistake to attempt to. By the time the regulation was developed, blogging will be totally different than it is today. And when regulation applies in a country or in a jurisdiction, the Internet is global. It's just regulation in the context of the Internet is not a good idea. I do think that communications by executives is an issue, and Sarbanes-Oxley has, the legislation there is very specific about what people say and what people don't say about certain issues. And it depends on the level and the nature of the company. If it's a public company and if it's an officer of that company, then what they say is deemed to be of legal impact. And it doesn't matter how they say it. It doesn't matter whether it's a blog or an email or an instant message. In fact, in the securities business, they are required by law to keep a log of all instant messages because they are considered to be legal communications, official communications. But I don't think that's really the point here. The point is that blogging empowers people with a point of view to be able to communicate more easily than ever before, and allows the users of the world, the readers of the world, a very simple way to find well-organized, well-archived content. That's what this is all about from my perspective, and it's a really great thing. It's mushrooming the amount of information available, but more importantly, the relevance of the information becoming available and the currency of that information.
You need to add anything, Mina, on this?
No, I agree with what John said. It is a power, and I think we find less cases of, you know, things being abused and, you know, secrets being revealed as people actually just using it as a platform to, you know, be evangelists of their products and their companies, and I think that's a good thing as well.
Yeah, let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages, and let's talk about the intellectual property and copyright-related issues that could surface. Not right now, maybe when we start to using blogging for other purposes where somebody would like to have ownership. So let's come back from the break and discuss about this, so please stay tuned.
Mm-hmm.
today, college graduates average 75 to 110% more income than non-graduates. But if you don't have time to go to college, let the college come to you via the internet. At University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree when and wherever you want in just 2 to 3 years. University of Phoenix, the largest private accredited university in the U.S. We offer degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix Online at 1-800-797-3011.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Informative, entertaining, and educational talk. www.voiceamerica.com. Come find out what you've been missing.
Rule number one when investing, always have a strategy. Rule number two, listen to Strategies for Enlightened Investors with Jim Whitten and Lance Alston. Heard every Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, Strategies for Enlightened Investors will expose investment myths that just aren't true and let you know about financial planning strategies for your future. Become an enlightened investor every Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business.
Politics and business go hand in hand. To find out how, tune into the Tammy Says Show every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. The Tammy Says Show will feature informative and influential guests involved in the political world, as well as some of today's top business leaders. So tune in every Monday and get your questions answered as she cuts to the chase in the issues that affect your bottom line. That's the Tammy Says Show every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk Radio, BusinessAmerica.com.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
You are listening to Managing Technology the Right Way, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is First IM and Now Blogging, the Enterprise Adoption Challenge. Our guests for today's show are John Patrick and Mina Trott. John is the president of Attitude LLC and former vice president of Internet Technology at IBM. Mina is the co-founder and president of Six Apart, the creators of the TypePad service and movable type software, two of the leading tools for publishing weblogs. We were, before the break, touching the topic about the copyright issues, potential copyright issues and intellectual property issues with respect to the blogging. And while right now it is still up the ramp, so everybody is blogging, but soon somebody would like to say that, okay, this was my blog, this was my thought, and why did you steal it? Or maybe when we start using commercialize this, because we are in a habit of commercializing everything that comes our way, people would start like to get ownership of this. So is there any way people can really have a stamp on the blog that they wrote or the content that they wrote, and somebody uses it termed as plagiarism then?
I mean, I think this used to be more of fear than it should be, probably because if you're writing a post and you know you're writing something that's worthy of being stolen, you're usually read by people. So you don't have the fear that you're going to lose your readers because suddenly somebody's taken your post somewhere else. And because blogs and the post and what's popular move at such a rapid rate and people find out what's hot and what's interesting, it's a very good chance that you'll actually see your post if it has been stolen. Or, you know, in a way that you can actually just say, you know, this has been done. And then it's I don't think it really happened. I think people were more scared when syndication was taking off that it would happen. But for the most part, it isn't really an issue.
So it's only at the time of adoption of these blogs into, like, somebody tries to code them that, you know, this is what I said. That's the time when maybe, you know, people use content from the blog and say, okay, please refer. People have not started doing it, but they would eventually start talking about, okay, can we refer to a blog as an authentic publication which could be referred to? And, you know, they can put it in their article or maybe other blogs for that matter. So those kind of automatic and, you know, evolutions would, they seem at least they would happen. But, John, you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think blogging really... It doesn't change the basics of intellectual property. It does accelerate the amount of communications that potentially exist on a patentable topic. But the basic idea of being able to patent something is not affected by blogging. It's just another form of communication. And there's always the issue of prior art associated with a patent claim. And so blogs become just one more source of who said what to whom when.
And so the very fact that you have a stamp and you got a way that you can identify this was written this time of the day and by this guy actually gives that person the ownership about the original creation?
It's no different than email or a phone conversation or a letter or a fax. And, you know, there are always disputes about these matters. And, you know, that's why there's so many attorneys in the world, you know, because people want to fight about some of these things. But I don't think blogging fundamentally makes this particular issue better or worse. I think it does make the sharing of information better. And it, as I said earlier, it empowers the people who are the good communicators in the world to share what's going on. And those people need to have good common sense to not share things they shouldn't be sharing. If the research arm of AT&T or Microsoft or somebody is working on a new idea that they're investing a lot of money in and they feel they need to protect that idea in some way, then they will. And if it's more a matter of a general collaboration, then... you know, then it'll be more open. And that's clearly the trend in the area of software, is more openness, more collaboration, more open source, more sharing. That's what's behind Linux and the whole open source movement. And I think we all know that that's booming as an idea. Blogging helps that because it, again, improves and streamlines and better organizes and archives the communications.
And I think that you have to look at the word, I mean, blogging and the origin of what it is, because, I mean, we say blogging without thinking about it. I mean, it's short for weblog, and that's what people were doing originally, basically logging things that they were finding on the web. So referring to posts and quoting people and linking back is what weblogging is about to a certain degree.
Right.
And so, of course, those things are always encouraged. You can excerpt what someone's written, and most people will excerpt it and say, this is what this person said, and then link back to them. So there's this open communication. And, I mean, we've gotten to the point where we see newspaper articles or magazine articles quote webloggers, not necessarily because they're stating something that is a fact that has to be backed up, but just because they're asserting an opinion, and it's a way of getting, you know, an interview. I'd prefer probably them actually doing an interview, because it's kind of a lazy way of doing your work, is basically just pulling a quote from a weblog. But the nice part of that is if you are quoted and it's put out of context, you can always say, hey, this is what I originally said, which you can't usually do in a person interview.
One last question we had was, in terms of indexing the blogs, we are trying to have the search engines going after the keywords, and we've got other ways of searching it, but most of them are keyword searching. Is there an evolution where we would see the semantics-related indexing of weblogs so that people can actually write a plain English query and it really brings back with the semantics?
No question about it. Now, Nina could speak more about this technically than me, but what I see from a big picture point of view is that the weblog is really the very beginnings of the semantic web, meaning that it's a way for information to be related to other information. So the simple concept of a blog where you have an author, you have a category, you have a date, you have a content, you might have multiple categories actually, those tags become the metadata that allows the relationship between one posting and another posting, or between a posting and a calendar entry, or between a posting and a person's name, etc. So the metadata ultimately is the great potential here is to allow computers to communicate with each other and to automate the negotiation of contracts and establishment of purchase orders and finding information and facilitating workflow in research projects and on and on and on.
Lena?
Yeah, and we're creating this metadata without, the effort that usually prevents people from classifying their content. So when I give my post a title or a category, it's actually enriching the experience, not just tagging the content. So it's a way that people are actually producing things without really caring that they're producing it because it's not taking the time. And we're going to see it expand even farther. One thing that we're doing a lot is mobile blogging from phones and mobile devices. And as phones become more intelligent, we're going to be able to have, location-aware software. We're going to be able to capture the information that they want to capture. For instance, if you want to write about your trip in Paris and you're in Paris and you're looking at something like you're looking at the Eiffel Tower and it's aware of that, that's another piece of content or metadata that can actually be grabbed without you having to input it. So I think, it's just the beginning and there's so much that's going to be coming, and I think weblogging is really at the forefront of this.
On behalf of the show, on our listeners, I would like to thank you, Mina and John, for sharing your thoughts about how the future of blogging is going to be and what it will take for its adoption by the organizations.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
I urge all listeners to participate as this is the key to success of this show. As we saw, blogging is more than a tool to vent out our creative energy. If used well, it could serve multiple purposes, including knowledge aggregation, valuable source for primary research, since the content is generally directed by the individuals who could otherwise be interviewed to obtain same answers, and much more. Thank you again for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next Friday, take care and God bless.
Thank you for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. Please join Sanjog All next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.